The young man, twirling and leaping, spun from side to side of the tunnel. The ring of spectators rocked backwards as he bore down upon them, whirling the blade over his head. The singing had turned to a universal howl, and the drummers, rolling and lolling with the furious and invisible motion of their hands, were lost in a transport of noise. Flinging back his head, the novice drove the blunt end of the cut glass into his stomach. His knees sagged, and his head fell forward. There came a knock on the door, and a waiter came in with breakfast. Bond was glad to put the dreadful tale aside, but it took him minutes to forget the atmosphere, heavy with terror.
Welcome to the James Bond Complex. My name is Matt.
I'm Edgar.
We are a Bond podcast, a James Bond podcast, that covers the entire James Bond phenomenon, from Fleming to film and everything in between.
Ooh.
I was making you wait. Sorry.
No, I love the anticipation. That's the best part.
Oh, so we're back again. We're back with Fleming, actually. Surprisingly,
some chap named Van Jensen pretending to be Fleming, anyways.
Yeah, and Cooper Ball.
Cooper Ball. You know, it's like one of those Nerf balls, but better.
So we're back. We're covering the second tome. Living and Let Die.
Yeah, a graphic novel adaptation from Dynamite. Yeah. We're recording this like on the weekend after some weird little news erupted concerning Dynamite.
That comics gave thing.
And this is going up in like 2 months. So by the time, like, there's no point in having a conversation about it because it'll be like old hat by then. But the gods have decided that we would record this just as the publishing house is experiencing rocky waters. Mm-hmm.
So we first discussed the Casino Royale adaptation that I had read months and months, well, years ago, at least a year and some change since. And this is actually brand new. It's not very long since I've read that. And it's an adaptation of Live and Let Die, the 1954 short novel by Mr. Ian Fleming, and it's an adaptation of Live and Let Die. They don't change much. They don't change anything. From tones a little bit, not as they don't use colorful language as much as they do in the original prose novel, which I didn't mind, but the context is still here. There's a lot of there's no way around it, so I'll just dig in. There's a lot of evil black people in this book. Sorry.
Yes, except the little train porter that gives them the scoop. I think he gives him a little tip to find to not a trap, but a homemade alarm if anybody sneaks into their compartment while they sleep on the way down to Jacksonville. That's pretty much the only nice black person in this whole book. Everybody else is working for Mr. Big because they fear him or because they like doing evil things. They get a real kick out of it.
Yeah, it feels a little bit, you know, I might bring the book, the movie, everything in between, but in the movie, it's the same. Like, that aspect hasn't changed from the adaptation of the movie, but in the movie, it feels more mischievous. Well, in this comic book adaptation, they feel like it feels darker, a little bit more creepier. The fact that it feels a little bit more it's nasty, like it's something that's a little bit that I didn't pick up on as much. Like, in the book, it feels like two white dudes in their 50s, in the 1950s, going on on a trip, like an almost like a safari in New York of that era, like Black New York of that era. And in the comic book, it doesn't, like, that ooh, that fancy aspect is not present. It just feels weird.
Well, there's a little part where they go to the nightclub where there's the not the singer but the dancer that's pretty much in the nude, and there's a little passage. Again, it's weird saying a little passage. I mean, it's straight out of Fleming's book. But there is mention that Bond is wooed. You know, Bond is wooed, and
I was wooed also. Have you seen those drawings? I was wooed. Let it be known. There's a lot of nudity in that book. Compared, like, if you're buying this, I think it's just a comic book for kids. Let it be known. There's a lot of a little bit racier material that you don't find in the monthly comic book series, or even in the Casino Royale adaptation. There's a lot more
much more salacious.
Yes,
I don't mind. Like, I'm a grown up. I don't mind. I was like, oh, that is titillating, as one would say. But it has to be said, it's a little bit more intense.
Well, there's more adult content. There's more adult content as far as what people would generally understand to comprise of adult content. And I think that's what, you know, the Ian Fleming estate and Dynamite are probably trying to accomplish with these books, since we've read two of them. There are only two of them. God knows if there'll be any more. It's smelling unlikely, but I don't think these sell very well, from my understanding.
I'd really love to see a comic book adaptation of Moonraker.
Yeah, so would I.
I would want to see all of them. Imagine the short stories.
That'd be kind of interesting. It's definitely an interesting experiment. The one thing that that came to my mind as I read this one, Live and Let Die, you know, and it's going to be a bit of an unfair criticism, because I'm very much a proponent of reviewing what you have and don't just review what could have been. But what's curious about what we're doing this evening by talking about Live and Let Die is that 2 weeks ago, our recording schedule is a little bit out of whack during this COVID, but we were on our mics just a couple weeks ago, and we did the Casino Royale episode, so it's very fresh in our minds. And the major difference, or one of the major differences between these two books, is that Live and Let Die, apart from having a different artist, it looks very different. I feel that there is probably twice as much text to read in Live and Let Die than there is in Casino Royale. And in fact, before we recorded, it's in my library. I only have Live and Let Die by my side, but I'm trying to remember, like, is my memory playing tricks on me, or am I misremembering Casino Royale, even though it was only a couple weeks ago? And I leafed through it, I flipped through it, and there are definitely many, many, many pages in Casino Royale where the art and the inking and the shadows are telling the story, which to me is the ideal way of translating a novel to a comic book form. Comic book is a visual medium. Yes, there's going to be dialogue. Yes, there can be boxes that describe what's going on in a character's head. And I can certainly there are square boxes in Casino Royale that feature Fleming's prose. And I can certainly understand why they want to respect Fleming's prose. It is Ian Fleming's Live and Let Die. I'm not saying there shouldn't be any, but I almost felt, it almost impeded on the art. There were panels where there were so many boxes of text that I would suddenly start reading and think, like, I wonder what the full unfiltered picture, what the full unfiltered drawing would be. Most notably, the ones where Bond is scuba diving to the Île of Surprise, and you have all these fish. And it's beautifully drawn, but they're like five boxes of text of five lines each. And it got me thinking, like, who is this book for? This is going to sound mean. I thought of you.
Hey,
but by which I mean you're very much an audiobook proponent for reasons we don't need to get into. You don't read many books, but if you had never read a Fleming and you were very curious to know what they're about, I mean, geez Louise, this graphic novel adaptation of Live and Let Die would hit the spot. There's so much of the prose. I feel like 50% of the book is in this.
Yeah,
but it also has drawings. Which I guess in of itself was a bit of a weird proposition. Like, who in 2020 is dying to discover Fleming, but, you know, oh, I really want to know what Fleming's all about, but I don't like reading books. Okay, well, this comic book exists. Like, how many people like that are out there? So I think the whole project is a little bizarre, if you ask me.
It's, you know what's most bizarre, and I think you told me that Van Jensen said he's done. Like, yeah, this is his last effort. So
he said that in an interview. It might have been on JBR. I think JBR had him. Jack Lugo, the comics of Bond.
I don't know if it's a project that was proposed to him by Dynamite, but it feels like the other way around. It feels like he probably went and then said, I'll adapt them in comic book forms. I really want to do that. And I don't know how his scripts are written. I think because in a way I've had like description, like you could see how he writes. I don't remember. Like, I didn't check the back. Yeah. There's so much. They're text heavy. I mean, he probably studied film because that's, it looks like a film script, the directions, you've got narrations and stuff. It's so verbose. It's a little bit too intense. Like page four, like he gives like almost panel directions. And I'm like, you know, there's one way of doing a comic book, which is, you know, you get a script, you get describe which panel, the order, you really, and there's the Stan Lee / Marvel way of doing things. And it's basically, you have a plot synopsis, one word sentence, and the artist just draws panels, pages, maybe a fight or two. And then the writer gets that information and puts the balloons in and the dialogue and description. That's one way of doing it, the comic. I tend to prefer guys who do both, even sometimes if they're either their script or their art suffers. I like having one voice. This feels like three people made that book. You got Fleming, you got Van Jensen, and you got Baal. Like all of them trying to put a little bit more of themselves.
Well, Van Jensen as the quote writer of this book, he obviously did the same thing with Casino Royale. He's taking Fleming's text and saying, well, which sections of the text are necessary to describe what's going on? Which is where I think I don't like Live and Let Die as much as Casino Royale. I felt Casino Royale struck a fantastic balance between the artwork telling the story, as well as Fleming's prose and, of course, the dialogue. Whereas I felt this time around in Live and Let Die, there are many, many passages, and I would argue too many passages, where essentially the rectangular boxes are literally telling us what Bond is doing. And I kept noticing that and thinking, well, no, I want Ball to show me what Bond is doing. It's a comic book. Let Ball tell me what Bond is doing. I don't need to read again Fleming's prose. I have the novel. And if you're picking this up, it sort of goes to the point I was saying earlier, like who out there is dying to discover Fleming but is allergic to reading books, so they'll buy this? What, like 2% of the people that'll buy this?
There are also people like you and I that have read the books, seen the movies, and you know they know that there's a difference in between, but the comic book is closer to film. It's more of a visual medium, so I think it's people like us that are trying to appeal to us, people who've read the book and, you know, kind of want to see the world of Fleming's Bond. And it's, I'm not as negative as you seem to be. I think it's not as moody as Casino Noir felt moodier than this book feels. This book feels more, a little bit more action, a little bit more sleazy at times. But it's still like I still enjoyed it. Like I did have a good time reading the book and looking, oh, how did he draw that character? Oh, that's pretty much how I saw him. Like they show Teehee, and Teehee, I have the movies Teehee in mind, and he's a big burly guy with a big afro, and I'm like, oh, that's different. When he gets after Felix gets eaten by a partially eaten by a shark, the battle he has there, it's like it's right out of License to Kill. Like I'm like I don't mind it because I like License to Kill, but I'm like, yeah, that's definitely a lot. And when the guy gets eaten by a shark, that shark is like makes the shark from Jaws look like a baby shark. That shark is humongous and probably swallows the guy in one bite. The ending is probably the most disturbing because he Bonnet and Solitaire gets stripped down naked. I think Bond keeps his underwear though, but yeah, Solitaire is bare-ass naked, and it's wow, it's a little bit titillating and unexpected from that point of view. It's I had a good time. I'm not gonna lie, like I'm a little bit disappointed they're not coming, doing a third one. And I like the underwater sequence. It's one of my favorite things in the book is that little tiny bit of sequence, which is described in a way, it's just like it makes me go, weirdly enough, it makes me go want to go diving more. Even though
Oh,
he gets attacked by
we,
every creature.
yeah. What's for about? Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
But you did bring a good point at that sequence. Like it feels like you should have cut back a little bit on the verboseness of the book. I want to see if you have the same problem that I do. There's something. It's early in the book. It's flip open. You got the first page, chapter one, the red carpet. Flip it open when he's getting his passport printed, not printed, but stamped. Can you look at that panel, the close up of the hand, and look at the thumb? There's a misprint. You see it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's like the stamp is on his thumb as well. That's
yeah, it's
bizarre.
probably a, it's pro, it's layering. Like the guy probably in his Photoshop, and nobody cut it, but I cut it, and it's kind of cute. I'm not upset about it. I'm like, oh no, I won't. I'm like, I love these defects. These defects feel like somebody made it, a human being who makes mistakes. It's adorable. I love those mistakes. I was, I had, I have to. Like, we went to New York a year and some change. You must have been like me, like excited to see the Saint Regis and the bar. I was like, oh, that's I really want to. And unfortunately, I don't know if, why they didn't, but I wish they'd feature more of that location because it's somewhere. And that, from what I gather, it hasn't changed a lot. And I'm like, why didn't they feature it a little bit more? You don't see the painting, and I don't know if it's a copyright thing that they can't show the interior too much, but I was like a little bit disappointed with their New York. But you do see a lot of stuff from the era. Like they obviously again did their research, but the scenery is just get disappointed. And you don't see the famous fire hydrant where he leaves the car in front of us.
I don't remember them spending that much time in the King Cole Bar in the book, though. Isn't it just a few paragraphs? Or
Yeah,
is it a
I
whole?
know. So yeah, you don't spend that much time in the King Cole Bar, but I don't know why I feel. Yeah, it feels it's something. It's a place that I enjoyed being last time we went to New York as now sentimental.
Oh,
There's an uns
for sure. But I mean, there's a difference between this one individual's sentimental attachment to a location and the location's actual, I
something.
guess, importance in the book. You know,
It's
it's
something you can easily go to and you can easily research. I don't know. It's bugged me, but it didn't ruin the experience. Like I said, like you said, if you haven't read the book, this and you're adverse at reading, you prefer comics? There are people like that. Like, and some people like audiobooks for some reason. Crazy people. But it's also an artistic interpretation. And I liked, I really liked his rendition of Mr. Big and the death. The death is particularly gruesome, and it's pretty close to how I pictured it when I read the heard the prose.
He doesn't look very gray, though.
Now, that's something that's a little bit disappointing, though, with the coloring. I'm not just saying with the design, but the coloring, yeah, I wish they had worked that a little bit more, made him a little bit more gruesome. That would have made him more gruesome. He's black. He's not gray. They want to make him look like a shark the way he's described in the book. And if you, oh, it's so gruesome when he, I'm looking at the panel, that shark again is humongous. And I don't even know, do they have sharks in Jamaica? Sharks that size? That looks like a great white. I
can't pretend that I'm familiar with the aquamarine life of
Jamaica.
Coastal Jamaica, I'm afraid to say. It is an impressive panel. It is a very impressive panel, and it's fantastic. It's, you know, it is a panel that reminds us. Sorry, I don't think I've been speaking in the mic. Actually, I'm sort of toting my head towards the book. Is that, you know, the art that is here is quite good. I think Ball, for my money, anyways. You can chime in with maybe different opinion, but for my money, Ball's work stands out when it's in close up. Like when the robber is being eaten by the shark, or when we have a close-up of Bond or Solitaire or Mr. Big. I find he has a nice appreciation for like cartoony detail, which I liked a lot. And I find maybe his wider panels where we're looking at usually individuals, but more from afar. It wasn't quite as interesting, I felt. It maybe lacked a little bit of nuance. It lacked a little bit of character, I felt. But I love his close-ups. I find when he drew stuff in close-up, it was great. I think it was fantastic. There are some exceptions to that, though. I do like the chapter when they're describing Mr. Big's rise to power. And there's like a trio of thin horizontal panels describing how he killed a Russian spy in the Manhattan subway.
Yeah.
And it's basically a long shot from across the subway tracks. And you see one man, and in the next panel, there's a huge shadow behind the man. And in the third panel, the man is like falling into the tracks as the subway train is coming. Like that's great stuff. Like that's good. That's great comic book storytelling. That's great comic book storytelling. I like it when they do that. I just don't find they do that much of it. Like the reverse of that is I find when Bond arrives in Jamaica, the greatest place on the face of the earth, and he meets he meets Strangways. And Strangways like has no dialogue. It's all description boxes. Like, doesn't Strangways talk a little bit in the book?
Yeah, he does. It's weird. Even the entire section is, I don't know. It's not the best thing in the world either in the novel. But it feels weird that Strangways is rendered like basically mute during those sequences.
And Quarrel isn't much of a character either.
Yeah, and Quarrel looks he looks different. The first panel, he has wait, where is it? I looked at it. I'm like, I had to look twice. There's the first panel. You see them looking at the island, and I'm assuming it's Quarrel. He has like I think cornrows they call them in the first panel. And the second, and one page later, he has like a crew cut.
Oh no! That's not Quarrel. That's the two guys that Strangway sent out to investigate Île Surprise, and they never came back.
Oh, I misread that then.
So that's that's not the same character. But again, that's I was very disappointed with that passage. Again, there's good stuff here. There's good stuff here, and I don't want the listeners to think that I don't like this Live and Let Die adaptation. I think it's fine. But I was more enamored with Casino Royale because in that one, they let unfortunately the artist's name escapes me at the moment, but I think they let him run a little bit more free. And to me, take a Fleming book and make a comic out of it, make a graphic novel of it. What I imagine looks more like Casino Royale. Not necessarily the same artistic style, but just insofar as the art doing a lot of the legwork to tell the story. And I'd be curious to know, I don't know if they'd be willing to answer this or if they're allowed to answer this. They might not. But if ever I got a hold of Van Jensen or Ball, I'd like to know what were the early conversations like when you guys started working on Live and Let Die. Was the fact that, were there people that thought there wasn't enough Fleming prose in Casino Royale? And the estate said, well, hey, we're paying you to adapt, you know, our man's work here, and you're not using enough of his words. Like, you're making too much of a comic book here. Like, was that a criticism maybe? So they had to fall back on maybe what they thought they could do. I don't know. I mean, I'm speculating here. Like, take this with the tiniest of grains of salt. But it is, I felt it's a very stark difference.
Sorry, I cut you off. But I mean, it's also Live and Let Die. It's not the worst Fleming novel, but it's not his best either. It's sort of, I don't remember a ranking, but I to me it seems like something in the middle. I would have to look at the.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the fact that there are pirates involved, sort of. That's kind of funny.
They're in the book too. Yeah, there are issues with the book, but they try to also, I wouldn't say sanitize the prose, but they don't. It's not as colorful as it is in the novel. The description, everything. They're trying to sort of not upset anyone who might know Bond only from the movies and pick this up for their kids. And again, this is not a book for kids. This is pretty racy stuff and violent stuff too. Maybe for a 14-year-old or 15-year-old, but anything lower than 12, I don't think is appropriate.
Yeah, that's probably a good age, actually. Let the age at which you're kind of ready to start exploring the pleasures of the opposite sex. And there is quite a bit of that in here. I mean, we get the dancer in the nightclub. We get Solitaire near the end. She has massive, massive tits.
And that's something that's weird, because it's in the episode, or book episode, when she meets Bond, she sort of augments her cleavage, but there's a bit of dialogue in front of the, like, she,
well,
why?
See what I mean?
That in one image illustrates your issue with this book. It's something you don't necessarily, you don't need that much prose to fix this issue. Like, not prose, but you would remove a little bit of the prose and the book is immediately a little bit better. Not as bad, but it's just like, why? I'd love to see her boobs. I'd love to see her boobs. Is that wrong?
The description is really, it's quite literally, it's hiding her boobs. Which is bizarre, because they show her boobs in the open later in the book. So why did you hide them there? I don't really understand
it. Featuring, or like, she's presenting, basically. I know it sounds a little bit sexist, and you know, I'm speaking as somebody who loves comics, book, has read comics, has drawn a little bit of his own comic. Sometimes you need to learn to shut the F up and just let the picture speak for itself. And I think especially that panel kind of proves my point.
With Strangways, it felt like Fleming's prose is a bit of a crutch, whereas I never got that vibe in Casino Royale. I did like the fact that, and this might have to do with the fact that it's Van Jensen, so he wants, you know, he wants a little bit of that Van Jensen stamp on the material. But I do like that the Bond brain is back, where he like he'll see something, here's the exit, there's the exit, that person's not a threat.
I like that. I like
that's that. That's back. No, that's pretty cool. I did like that.
That's a clever addition on this part. Like I said, and there's a giant squid at one point attacking Bond, which I like because it reminds me of Dr. No. And I hope we, come on, Van Jensen, you gotta finish this. You don't stop at the second one.
Like that's a lot of books, though. That's a lot of books.
Yeah, but I mean, or Dynamite, please. I mean, you paid the license. Get somebody else to write it. Get Edgar and us for we'll write it, and I'll attempt to draw, and you can hire somebody else better than me to draw the stuff. Get Ruben to draw this. Anyone else?
I was thinking about there were some panels, the way the characters were drawn, it almost reminded me, like, maybe slightly more refined version of how you draw when you make posters. It didn't look that different.
I don't want to toot my own horn. I don't think I'm that there's a lot more details, and he spends a lot more time than I can allow myself to draw. I mean, some of the work that I'm looking at, it's just so much details. He probably uses reference. I don't think any comic book artist working today can create an entire book, an entire world, and the turnaround that they have to work with without using references. And they need to, I mean, just for the costumes, the little nurse uniform, the suits of the time, New York in the 1950s, the terrain, there's so much research that's obviously done for this book. The one thing that probably, I'm not that good either with that, but the coloring kind of, like Mr. Big, give him a little grayish taint. Make him look different. That's the point. He's a monster.
Make him look a little sick.
Yeah, a little gray. Oh, turn down that saturation just a little bit. Not too much, just enough that you notice it. That's a little bit upsetting, but not...
I do like the barracudas, though. The barracudas are pretty terrifying.
Scary as hell. Like when I said, that sequence in the book and even the comic book is captivating. But yeah, those things look like monsters.
There is one thing you notice the stamp, the overlay of the stamp on the government agent's thumb. I noticed something else, and I went back. I was like, am I missing something? Did they change this? Is this not happening at the same time of year as the book? And I don't know, they don't seem to be dressed very warmly for New York in January.
you're right.
but the chapter where we go back in time to M's office says something like, oh, 2 or 3 weeks ago in January in London. I was like, well, like, at most it's February in New York. Like, do girls just walk out in skirts and blouses in February in New York?
Yeah, you're right.
That was a little weird.
I forgot about that, but you're right. There's a few times. All the dudes are wearing, like, trench coats, and when you see a girl, she's in a little frumpy dress, and it doesn't look like it's January at all.
Because that was one of the things that struck me about the first few chapters of the book.
Chapter four, the big switchboard, there's a girl that's clearly wearing a summer dress, and you got Bond wearing a trench coat and a suit, a three-piece suit, and a hat, like it's going to rain. It's probably sweating his balls off in that get-up. And the girls are all wearing, like, all the men are wearing suits, and the girls have these little summer dresses. It's pretty funny. Oops.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, whoops. Doesn't make that much sense.
You know what? That might be on the author, and he probably didn't put in the description. Remember, this is January in New York. Nobody dresses with a little summer dress in January in New York. Or maybe it's somebody never. Like, I don't know if I don't want to assume that, but some people don't like. You talk to me about the desert, and I'm gonna say, oh, it's probably always warm, but no, it turns out that in the desert at night it turns really, really, really cold. So I don't know. It's maybe somebody that doesn't register that New York in winter, it looks more like the French Connection. Everyone's looking miserable, dressed in.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's never minus 20 in January in New York, but it's, you know, it's around zero, maybe a few degrees below, a few degrees higher. But
humidity is probably pretty much like Montreal. It's probably like uncomfortably cold, like the kind of cold that's, that you feel in your bones, kind of.
Well, this winter, I'll check the weather network and I'll change my settings from Montreal to New York. Just to have a good idea of what the temperature is like.
We'll do the, that's our next debrief, not debriefing, our next
detour, the climate of Bond.
Climate Bond. So what's the weather in Jamaica around this time of the year?
I will say this, just as much, I seem to recall us singing the praises of Casino Royale's cover, and I would very much like to do the same. About Live and Let Die. It is quite, it really is quite exquisite.
See, that's also something. They should turn these into posters.
Oh, yes, please.
Merch. I want merch. God damn it.
Who's, I'm trying to find out.
I think it's the interior. You need, I think I saw it, but I don't, or is it the back? I saw it. And front cover art by Faye Dalton. F-A-Y Dalton.
Oh, hold on a second. Faye Dalton, she does the pictures in the special edition folio hardcovers.
Yeah,
pretty sure.
Special edition folio?
Yeah, hold on a second.
Live podcasting. You're right. She did. She did. Well, she did. She does.
Yeah.
I think she... did she do Casino? Oh, wow. I love her artwork.
It's great. It's fantastic.
It is so sexy.
It makes you want to buy them, even though they're like $73 each, but it does make you want to buy them.
Wow, 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 wow. it is something else. She did the one for Casino Royale, too. I'm pretty sure. It looks different. This one feels a little bit more... comic bookish. I don't know. It reminds me. There's a cover for a 1940s issue of Batman that it's pretty much the same concept. The Joker is holding like a set of cards, and Batman and Robin are leaping from the cards to fight the Joker. It's I don't remember the issue number, but it's that's what it evokes in my like. It's I've seen that done before by other artists, but it's still it's evocative, it's sexy.
Oh, I mean, wow. Have you seen her cover for Casino Royale? It actually looks a lot like the cover of the graphic novel. It's lighter, there's more white on it, whereas the graphic novel has a lot of black in the background. You got Bond smoking, standing up behind the table. You got a Marilyn Monroe like character there. It's like she just did the same thing but maybe changed the angle. It's pretty funny.
For the folio or the
For the folio. Hold on. That's what I'm saying. I'm comparing the folio and the Dynamite.
Yeah, because they from what you're describing, they're all the same.
Yeah, the Moonraker one's really nice too. Oh, they're all nice. They're all nice.
Yeah, that's it's great work.
Three cheers for Faye Dunaway.
Faye Dunaway, yes.
Faye Dalton, rather.
Yeah.
Wow, that is quite exquisite work and very, very true. There is something very comic booky about the Live and Let Die cover, though. But it does it ever work, man? Does it ever work? That squid is great. Although it's funny how James Bond on the cover is not wearing his scuba gear. He's just...
It looks more like something from Dark to Know, in my mind, with the squid. But yeah, he's not wearing the same gear as he does in the story itself. But you know what? The one thing I hope people pick this book up, because you know what? I want Moonraker. I want all of them, to be honest with you. The short stories, you know what? There are short stories that I did not like, but I'm with clever editing and some not don't use too much of the prose. Something as boring as 007 New York could be pretty good in comic book form with a decent artist. The Living Daylights also. I mean that sniper. I want to see that sniper. I want somebody to draw me a sexy Russian sniper from that book, and she doesn't need to look like Kara. Please buy the book, and Dynamite Entertainment, once you settle your Comics Gate thing-majing, get working, get somebody else to work Moonraker. We want it from Russia with love, man. From Russia with love. If I'm not mistaken,
Dr. No would be an interesting one.
Yeah, the only one, you know what? I just really realized, we're a book away from Diamonds Forever.
Well, there's no guarantee that they'll ever make any more, so I don't know. I don't know what the status is. So yeah, we would certainly encourage people to pick up Casino Royale and Diamonds, and Live and Let Die. That would encourage, I believe, the publishing house and the Fleming estate to continue producing these books. It's a very interesting project. I think, you know, when they went into this project, I can't imagine that nobody thought that this would be niche. They probably don't print thousands upon thousands of copies of these books. There may be only a few hundred, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't even know if they sell outside North America. I think they probably do. They probably sell outside North America. Maybe some European markets have them as well. I can't imagine that these are books that sell worldwide. You know, it's very niche, and I think we've mentioned it too. James Bond is not exactly a brand that is synonymous with comic books. So not only is it a James Bond comic book, but it's a comic book that adheres very closely to the original Fleming material, which itself, in several respects, you know, feels a little bit outdated to a certain extent, but also feels modern in other respects. So, yeah, now that we've had the pleasure of buying two of them and talking about two of them for the show, I'm certainly more pro than anti, although I'm not. I wonder if Dynamite said, well, we'll make most of our money with the modern comics and we'll do the Fleming adaptations just for, like, because we can and it'll be cool. You know, I don't think they went into this thinking they'd
you know what? I think they make more money with those than the monthlies, because from what I don't remember the gentleman. I think it's Neil Adams. He said basically they make their money with the trade paperbacks. The monthlies, they make no money. It's a waste of money for them. For the monthlies,
I guess then the question becomes: are the trade paperbacks selling for the Bond stories? I don't know. I honestly have no idea.
They make money with trade, not with single issue. I'm pretty sure this is the future of comic books: is just giant trade paperback that come out once a year. I don't see the monthlies, and I don't know if many people read the monthlies. I know I stopped reading comics couple of years ago, five, 7 years ago, if not more. Like, I've completely I went to my store and I canceled. I had a pull list and I said, you know what, I don't think I'm gonna come back. Like, I moved location. I had a pile that I picked up, and he said, you don't need to pick all of it. And I picked up a few issues, and even those issues I never read them. And I got a bunch of Superman comics that I don't remember the name of the artist, but I'm like, oh, it's a great artist, and I never read them. They're in a pile somewhere.
Now, sometimes, I don't know, it's you spend so long doing something that maybe after a while you start to realize that you were, for the last little while, maybe you were just doing it on automatic pilot and your heart's not really in it anymore.
Yeah, it's,
oh, that could be it too. So
it was more like, yeah, mechanic.
But a reflex almost.
Yeah.
I'm still happy they're making the James Bond ones. Yeah, well, me too. But, you know, it's fun. I think they've been pretty good so far. And And again, you know, fingers crossed we will have a Moonraker. Apparently it won't be from Van Jensen, but regardless.
Hopefully. Oh, wait. I'm getting a... surprise. It's not from M. White.
Ooh, that is a surprise.
It's
surprise.
It's from Boris Grushenko. Slugheads, who you have people everywhere.
We do have people everywhere. We don't need the guidance system. We're not level 2 programmers. We're far beyond that.
My Russian accent is horrible. I was almost going to Schwarzenegger, not like Russian. It's horrible. Sorry.
Oh, they should remake GoldenEye and cast Schwarzenegger as Boris. That'd be quite something.
Bond. Just cast Schwarzenegger as a programmer in a Bond movie where...
They're in front of you and they can unlock very large doors.
I'm invincible.
I'm obviously talking about the huge tits. Oh, good grief. We do have people everywhere. I don't understand. www.thejamesbondcomplex.com, which also operates as our Tumblr account. I've never understood how that works, and nor do I care to understand. We're on Facebook, The James Bond Complex, Twitter, at The Bond Complex. We're hosted by Anchor.fm. Oh, Instagram. I think I forgot Instagram the last few episodes. You managed that. I'm so sorry. The search for The James Bond Complex. And if you want to listen to us, we hope you do. We're a freaking podcast, after all. You can go to Anchor. You can go to Spotify. You can go to Google Podcasts. And last but certainly not least, Apple Podcasts, where you can search for The James Bond Complex, subscribe, write a review, hopefully a nice one. We have feelings too. And leave us a 5-star glowing golden gun review. It helps with the algorithms and however the hell those things work on Apple Podcasts. We're both online sometimes. I primarily use my Instagram account, which is Edgar Chaput SOS.
I'm at MetalClair 007.
Because you're so much like James Bond. Can you give us a Bond James Bond? Like, what would your Bond James Bond be?
Mon nom c'est Bond James Bond.
That's James Bond Jr. James Bond Jr. Growing pains. He's like going from child to adolescence, and the voice is cracking a little bit. What's Goldfinger's niece called again?
Goldie.
Goldie. What the hell? You know what? I got an idea.
His name is Ulrich Goldfinger, and his daughter is something Goldfinger. Like finger is their last name. Goldie or Gold is their second name.
I have an idea. Tell me what you think. Listeners, tell us what you think. We reach out to Dynamite. We reach out to Casper Van Dien and Cooper Ball here. And we propose, if you don't have the time to do Moonraker, give us a high-end quality hardcover version of New James Bond Jr. Adventures. That would be something. Casper Van Dien. Van Jensen. Casper Van Dien. What the hell am I talking about? Sur ce, toujours un plaisir. Merci. Et hasta la próxima.
À la prochaine. Ciao. We'll